الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين. So we were discussing the أحكام الجبيرة. So in the previous class, we talked about
the situation in detail about the wound, whether the wound is open,
and what are we supposed to do in that case. The two situations where water making the water reach the wound is possible and it doesn't harm, or making the water reach the wound is harmful, and what are the rulings in both the cases. The second
situation which we would like to discuss today is the wound is closed, it's not open.
Yeah, there's a bandage over it, or a plaster, a bandage over it. So it's a closed wound. Now, in the case of the closed wound,
there are again two
options:
possible to open, not possible to open. If it is possible to open,
then there are again two options:
no hassle and no harm involved. And in the second case, harmful. Obviously, if there is no hassle and no harm, then your Shari'i obligation is to open the wound, open the bandage, do the wudu normally. And if it is harmful,
then we have
the bandage was, if the bandage the wound is on the hands or the feet, in that case
what we are supposed to do,
if water is harmful, then instead of pouring the water, if you are able to rub your wet hand, you must rub.
If you are unable to rub up the wet hand, obviously then we will
put a cloth over it, and clean tahir cloth, and rub the hand over the cloth. But if you are able to rub your wet hand over the wound, then you should rub your wet hand over it. If you are unable, then you will put a tahir pak cloth and wash the rest of the hand or feet
hand and face in the normal way. When you reach that wound, you just rub your hand over the cloth. About the head, if it's hair, the wound is on the hands and feet. About the, if the wound is over the head, which is the part of muscle, and the feet, we already discussed, which is also part of muscle. We already discussed last lesson that what we are supposed to do is that if you are able to, if it is on the head or the feet, then basically you would wash the hand. You would basically do the tayammum. If you remember, we talked about that in that case the tayammum is wajib. So we will do the tayammum, and in the case where the jabira, the wound, is over the head or the feet. So in one case we have to do mas as well, and that case was if you can basically put a cloth over the head, we discussed in the previous class, or put the cloth, you are able to put the cloth over the feet, then you have to put the cloth over the feet, do the rest of the washing of the face and hands in a normal way. When you reach the head or the feet for mas, then you put the cloth over them and rub your hand over it, plus you have to do tayammum as well. And if you cannot put the cloth over the head and the feet, then you have to do tayammum only, not the wudu. So this is what we discussed in the previous class. Now, the hands and the feet, so the head and the hands and the face, I'm sorry, hands and the face. Head and the feet we discussed in the previous class. Hand and face is what we are talking about today. So the head is the part of mas and the feet is part of mas. So that we discussed. Now hands and face, if you are, water is harmful, but the wound is here. Now if you can rub your wet hand, you do that. If you cannot rub your hand wet hand, then you put the cloth and rub over it.
Mm-hmm. So, in that case, do you put a cloth over the cast to do the rubbing, or you can do it on top of the cast itself?
Yeah, if you have the cast over it, the plaster over it, so you have to then basically, yes, you have to put the cloth over the plaster and rub the hand over the cloth. You cannot do it over the plaster.
Even if the plaster is tahir itself, I mean, there's
even
no
if it is tahir, yeah,
okay.
It has to be over the cloth. That's why when I buy these bandages, I buy the fabric-based bandages. So basically, if the water is harmful to the wound on my finger, and I cannot remove the bandage, then at least I can do it over it because it's a tahir cloth. Unless if the blood comes out up to the cloth and becomes najis, then obviously I have to put another tahir cloth and rub the hand. Instead of buying the plastic bandages, which adds the hassle. So, okay. So, we are now done with this segment where the wound is closed, but it is possible to open. Now, what if the wound is closed, but it is not possible for you to open the wound? Now, in that case, there is one thing which is added in some of the books of fiqh, which to me, it's not, they say another two situations that when it is, you can open it, then you open and let the water reach. Well, when we are already discussing that it is not possible to open, then I don't think we have to mention that option any further. So I will just skip that thing. So I'll just mention that
if it is not possible to open, now
in that case, whether the wound is najis or it is tahir.
When it is not possible to open it, it doesn't matter, it is najis or tahir.
So in both the case,
a person must keep in mind, although it seems that it doesn't make sense here, because we are already discussing the option when the, it is not possible to open, so it doesn't make sense to say this thing,
but I will just say it because if there is still any room remaining, then you keep that in mind and you do it according to that.
If the wound is najis and obviously it is not possible, then again they say if it is possible to open, then you open it. Open it, make it tahir, then do the wudu. And if you cannot open it at all, then
if you say open it and make it tahir and then do the wudu. The other option is you cannot open.
When you can't open, then basically if the bandage is of fabric or cloth plus it's tahir, that means the blood doesn't seep from the wound up to the fabric of the bandage, the bandage is still tahir, it's not just from inside, but the bandage from the up, the fabric is tahir, and it is tahir, then basically your ruling is that rub your wet hand over it. You rub your wet hand over the bandage. Is that clear?
Now, in the case where the bandage
is not, you can't open it and the bandage is not tahir,
then your duty is to place a tahir cloth and rub your hand over it.
Any question about this?
So if it is clear, so we will just move forward, inshallah. Should I erase this? There are 7 ghusl basically which are in total wajib on a person. The first one is janabat. Mayyit. Washing of the dead person's body. Mayyit means the dead person. Masl mayyit means ghusl upon touching the dead. Fourth of all is for the hayz, the monthly cycle for the woman. Fifth of all is the nifas. This is the childbirth. Blood. And sixth of all is istihaza. Which is the blood of the irregular bleeding for the woman. And seventh and last of all, the ghusl, which becomes wajib due to ahad or qasam or nazar. A covenant with Allah means the ahad. Or qasam means swearing. Nazar something like a vow, I think. So before we come to the procedure of ghusl, which is obviously 2 procedures, we'll talk about tartibi and irtimasi ones inshallah, but the causes of janabat, what causes the ghusl of janabat shar'an, are 2 things. First is
Khurujul Mani, the seminal discharge, whether in the sleeping or while a person is awake. Second of all is let me write in the fiqhi term and I can explain it to you later. Duhulul Hashfa.
That means
an intercourse which involves that much portion which is circumcised, that much front portion, if that much enters in the intercourse, then the duhul is wajib, whether there is a seminal discharge or not.
So this is the second reason why the ghusl of janabat becomes wajib. Somebody changes the mind later on, but if this much duhul and penetration has happened, the ghusl of janabat is wajib.
And to recognize the seminal discharge, our fiqh has mentioned three signs. And those three are, first of all, it comes out with force. Second of all, it comes out with shahwat, means the sexual pleasure. And third of all, the body gets a little bit lazy or sust after the discharge. That's the third sign. So if these signs are available, well, this is obviously for the person who is regular. If a person is ill or weak, then this is not going to apply in that, in his case. So
these are three signs. Now, if a person has the seminal discharge or the second reason, the ghusl of janabat becomes wajib. Now that the ghusl of janabat is wajib,
This one also does not apply for the ill person or the weak person. Only this much is enough. Likewise for the woman, these two do not apply for the woman necessarily. This much is enough. So if janabat, the person who is in the state is called, where one of these two causes are found, the person is now called mujnib. The ghusl becomes wajib on a mujnib person.
Before we come to the things, the ghusl, the procedure of ghusl, let's also discuss about the five things which are haram on the mujnib. Shall I erase this? Thank you.
5 things which are haram. The first, touching, the text of Quran. So you can touch the sidelines, hashia of Quran, but you cannot touch the text as haram. Likewise, the names of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and the 12 Imams. You cannot touch that.
The second thing which is haram is entry into
Masjid al-Haram, Al-Masjid al-Haram, which is the Masjid of Holy Kaaba, and Masjid al-Nabi, the Masjid of the Holy Prophet.
Entry into these two masajid is haram.
So let's suppose if somebody is sleeping and he ends up having the, you know, seminal discharge in ihtilam and a wet dream, it would be wajib on him to just rush out, come out of the masjid straight away. He cannot stay. Just like we, for the women, if they are doing tawaf and they end up having their monthly period coming during the tawaf, they should just leave the tawaf and step out of the masjid straight away.
The third thing which is wajib, which is haram on the mujnib, is tawakkuf. Tawakkuf fil masajid means staying.
In masjids. We are talking about other than these two masjids. These two masjids we already discussed, you cannot even step a single inch into that. We are talking about the rest of the masjids in the world. Staying, that means you go there and you stay for there for a while, even for 2 minutes is a stay. Any duration of stay into any masjid in the world is not allowed. It is allowed that you enter from one door and you exit from the other. Without stopping. You just keep on walking, enter and you exit from the other door. This is allowed. Likewise, according to ihtiyat wujubi, ihtiyat wajib, the harams of imams are having the same rulings. Haram, if you're visiting Karbala, if you're visiting Najaf, if you're visiting Mashhad, any haram of the imam has the same ruling. Don't stay during the time of Janabat. You can enter from one door and exit from the other. Don't stay.
According to Ihtiyat Wajib, it will have the same ruling.
The fourth thing which is haram upon the mujnib is placing or putting anything into a masjid. You bring a mafatih al-jinan, you bring a tasbih, sajdagah, turbat, and you want to put it in the masjid, that's haram. If you are mujnib, you cannot do that. You have to give it to somebody else and he can take it inside. You cannot put anything in. Picking up thing is allowed. If you enter into the masjid from one door, you pick up something while you are walking without staying. During the walk, you pick up something and you keep on exiting from the other door. That's okay. But placing something, putting something into it is not allowed. And last of all, the last thing which is haram on the mujnib is reciting Surah Al-Azaim. That means those surahs of Quran which has the wajib sajda. And those are Surah number 32 and 41 and 53 and Surah number 96. And the names, if you want, I can write down Alif Lam Tanzeel. Meem Sajda 53 is Surah An-Najm, which is revealed in the Madh of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and Surah Iqra, Bismi Rabbika Alladhi Khalaq. So these are the four surahs of Quran which we call Suwarul Azaim, which have one ayat of wajib sajda. All the rest of the ayat of sajda are mustahab in the rest of the Quran, but these four are wajib. So you cannot read anything during the time of janabat. A mujnib cannot read. Likewise, a woman in haid or nifas, it's haram for her to read anything of the Suwarul Azaim. Any part of the surah, even if you read Bismillah Rahman Rahim, even if you read Bismillah, that's also haram. Just the letter Bay with the kasra, if you say it with the niyat that this Bismillah belongs to one of these four surahs, even saying Bay is haram because that's part of the surah. So anything of those four cannot be read. If you read Bismillah with the intention of that Bismillah is belonging to some other surah, that's okay. You can read Quran if you are a mujnib. It is not haram to read Quran. For a woman who is in haiz, it is makruh to read even one ayat of Quran. It is makruh. But for the mujnib, you can read Quran more than seven ayat is makruh.
Oh,
yes.
So it's makruh reading
more than seven. So you can read Fatiha. Fatiha is seven.
So
how about going to, you know, how in Pakistan they have Imam Barga with the Shabi of all the harams of Imam,
mm-hmm,
are there, but they are not part of masjid. But people go to Ziyarat for to Shabi of those. That's what they call Imam Barga, where there's a lot of alams, and so is that okay to enter that?
I'll discuss that with you.
Okay.
So about the first part, is it the same ruling for now we have Quran in cell phones, we cannot touch or open that application?
No, you can touch that, because touching the screen is not considered to be touching Quran, because you are touching basically the glass, not the Quran.
Printed Quran, if there was a piece of glass, would somebody be able to touch the glass on top of the page of the Quran?
Yeah, if you're touching the glass, not the text itself, then it's okay. Or if there's a plastic coating, let's suppose on a page of Quran, there's a plastic coating, then it's okay to touch because your finger, your skin is not touching the text itself. So inshallah, we will discuss the procedure and the two procedures, Tamasi and Tartibi, in the next and in the next class inshallah. But one last thing before I end is that wudu is not allowed. It's not wajib, plus it is not even an option to do. Is not ja'iz. It means it is not allowed. We cannot do the wudu. It's not our choice. We are not even allowed to do the wudu after the ghusl of janabah. But ghusl itself is sufficient, and that's the only ghusl which is sufficient. It suffices for wudu. Some of the maraji, there is a difference in that. Some maraji say the ghusl of hayd is also sufficient, but most of them don't say that. And some say ghusl of Jumu'ah is also sufficient, but most of them don't say that. But for hayd, for janabat, everyone says the same thing. So this ghusl is sufficient in the place of wudu, and obviously it's not even allowed to do the wudu after that. Masl mayyit is obviously not sufficient for wudu. So if you do the ghusl of masl mayyit, then you have to do the wudu after it or before it. Any other question? Well, as you know, ghusl of janabat itself is not wajib. It is mustahab to do. It becomes wajib when you enter into the time of prayers. Because of the prayers, because you cannot do the prayers without taharat, now you have to achieve taharat either through wudu or through ghusl or tayammum, whatever is applicable in your situation. So if you are a mujnib, then in your situation ghusl is applicable. So now the time of adhan enters, ghusl of janabat becomes, namaz, prayers becomes wajib on you, and because of the prayers, which is wajibun asli, ghusl will also become wajib on you, which is wajibun tab'i, dependent wajib. Otherwise itself, ghusl of janabat, if you want to do before the time of adhan, it is mustahab to do. It's good that we do it.
Is it makruh to delay it?
I don't recall reading that. I can double check that before I say, but it is certainly makruh to eat food or drinks before doing the ghusl of janabat, and also it is makruh to go to sleep before doing the ghusl of janabat, and also it is yeah, these two are confirmed. Now, doing the ghusl of janabat quickly, is it wajib, mustahab? I have, have to double check that. I don't remember that.
So, like eating, drinking, or sleeping?
Is makruh, unless you do the ghusl. Now, if you do the wudu, then the karahiyat is removed for the eating and drinking and sleeping. And also the Sharia says that before having a second time intercourse with the wife, it's also better to do the ghusl of janabat than do it for the second time.
If a person is mujnib and even he cannot eat or drink, if he performs ghusl, only the ghusl after he is mujnib, and he wants to eat or drink something.
So that wudu is not enough, because that wudu is just, you are doing as a mustahab wudu, and mustahab does not take the place of wajib. That is in the month of Ramadan, that you are allowed to sleep twice. If you are mujnib in the night, any night of the month of Ramadan, and you are allowed to sleep without doing the ghusl, if you know that I'm going to wake up. If a person knows, well, I will wake up, inshallah, I know, I will wake up. You know your waking up habits. You know that you usually can wake up. If you know you can wake up, you can go to sleep. Now then, let's suppose you woke up and there's still a lot of time remaining for Fajr, and the Sharia allows you to go to sleep for the second time as well, with the same niyat and condition that you know you're going to wake up, so you can go to sleep again. But let's suppose you went to sleep and you again woke up. Now sleeping for the third time is not allowed, unless you first do. Even if you know you're going to wake up, it's not allowed to sleep for the third time. Doesn't matter how much time remaining. Now that you woke up for the second time before Fajr in the night, you have to do the ghusl after two sleeps.
It's only in Ramadan.
That's in the month of Ramadan. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين.